Welcome to Nightlife, the first hour.
Well, shows like The Titanic, The Wolf of Wall Street, When They See Us, Hollywood loves a true story. The list is lengthy of movies and TV shows that have been inspired by real life, including by homegrown filmmakers. And we've got some terrific guests on the show tonight. Documentaries are a different kettle of fish altogether. Tonight we're going to talk about true stories that have been dramatised. How much of what you see on the screen actually happened? And does it matter? And what goes into turning a great story into a great film or TV show? If you've got a favourite movie or TV series that was based on a true story, it may well have been created by one of our guests tonight. Tony Briggs is an actor and writer and director and co-founder of production company Typecast Entertainment. He wrote and created the stage play and hit award-winning film The Sapphires, and directed the short film Elders, based on a true story of a young boy who must find his way back to his elders in the midst of the Australian bush. He joins us first up. Tony, good evening to you. Welcome to Nightlife.
Good evening. Thank you for having me.
Great to have you with us. Also joining us, Tony Ayres. Tony's the founder of Tony Ayres Productions, executive producer, director, screenwriter, award-winning showrunner, and, gee, the list of his films and TV shows is pretty lengthy. It includes most recently, of course, the terrific show Fires, The Family Law, Stateless, and The Home Song Stories, which is based on his childhood. Tony, good evening to you and welcome to Nightlife.
Bill, how are you?
And very, very well. And just so that everyone's not called Tony, Angie Fielder joins us too as a producer and co-founder of the award-winning production company Aquarius Films. And Angie produced the wonderful movie Lion with Nicole Kidman, based on a true story. Angie, good evening to you and welcome to Nightlife.
Hi, Phil. Thanks for having me. Lovely to be here.
Yeah, no, it's an intriguing idea, isn't it, the idea of the true story. And, look, it does grab us, doesn't it? When we see those words, we're more intrigued than perhaps we would be at just a title. Tony Ayres, why do you think that is?
I mean, I think that people have a craving for something authentic because, you know, like even watching the screen involves a willing suspension of disbelief. Hmm. So, you know, if it's kind of authentic, that makes it easier to believe in the story. And, you know, that's the first pact that a storyteller has with their audience.
Yeah, so we're looking for authenticity. We think are we thinking this story is going to be more important or more compelling than other stories because it actually happened?
I think that maybe it's that you can believe it, so that if it takes some, you know, big unexpected twists and turns, you kind of go with it more. I mean, that's for me as an audience, that's kind of why I tend to be drawn into based on true stories. Mm.
Tony Briggs, what do you think?
Well, I mean, you know, I think people like to sort of explore the other in some aspects too. You know, I think that one of the things about the Sapphires is that it was really unique at the time, and you never really got to explore Aboriginal people on the screen, in particular Aboriginal women, mm. in powerful characters, playing powerful characters, and also the fun side of it too. You know, seeing the humour of a different community than what you may be used to. I think it was one of the appealing things about my story and my film, or my mother's story, really. Mm. So, you know, I think people look for, you know, something that's, you know, often look for something that's really different to what they're used to, just to, you know, and sometimes just escapism, you know. And I
think yeah, I know. I remember talking on a panel once about with creative writers, and somebody rang up and said, oh, but they just make things up. I said, yes, and it isn't that the power of it? Angie, do you think the fact that people are looking and thinking, well, this isn't made up, in a strange sort of way, makes it more powerful?
Yeah, I do actually. I think that there's that saying, the truth is stranger than fiction, you know, and I kind of really think that it is. I think often when you hear about or watch these amazing stories, you think to yourself, you couldn't write this, you know, you couldn't think it up, you couldn't imagine it. And, you know, I think people are really blown away by that. I think it's like what Tony Ayres said earlier, it's sort of even more compelling, and it doesn't sort of matter how crazy it is because you're being told that it's a true story. I think the other side of it too is that you sort of always know with a true story that you're going to be getting something that's universal in a way, even though it's so specific because it's about someone's life or, you know, the lives of a small group of people. You kind of always know that you're going to get, and what's appealing and why people make those stories is because there's something about those stories that is universal and that everyone's going to be able to connect to.
Yes, in a way, I suppose that you can lose yourself in the fantasy genre of Game of Thrones, I suppose, and be mesmerised by storytelling powers or The Lord of the Rings, which would be top of the list for many people of the best movies they've seen. But when you're looking at a true story, the connection with your own human self is more powerful, do you think, Angie?
Yeah, I do. And I think it's also your connection to humanity in general, I suppose, because you're kind of getting this window into another person's world, which can be entirely different to your world, and yet at the same time you feel connected because you still feel things in the same way that they do, and you know we all still share universal feelings and sort of experiences, and so it gives you a universal a unique look into this new world that you haven't seen before, and yet at the same time you feel like you're the same. And there's a real sort of power of connection in all of that.
I want to discuss all of your wonderful projects that the three of you have been involved in a moment. But just before we start, Tony Ayres, what's important here? Is telling the story important that you want to tell, or is telling the truth important?
I suppose I have a writer's perspective on this insofar as I don't see, like, your craft as a writer is to make the audience feel as though they're experiencing something truthful.
Yeah.
So, and that sometimes involves telling the truth and sometimes it doesn't, because you're still, you know, translating a human experience into another medium or another form. So I think that the craft of the telling is as crucial as the truth itself. Like, and I think the two things meld into one. The truth is the end objective, and the craft of the telling is the process.
Angie, for you, I mean, the story of Lion is such a wonderful setup, a story. What was important there, to record it faithfully or to actually tell a story that would compel an audience?
It's a combination of both of those things, and I think they're both equally important. And certainly in the case of Lion, where we were telling a story about someone who was still very much alive, and also the experience that we were, the story that we were telling in the film was also very recent. It only happened about 4 years before the film actually came out. So Saru and the family were still very much dealing with the repercussions of everything that had happened. So we had to be very gentle and very careful with them, and you know, they were very much wanting us to tell a truthful story, and we very much wanted to tell that. But we also needed to fit it into the shape of a feature film and make it a shape that the audience, you know, that audiences would want to go and see, and that would be compelling in a kind of cinema format. So there's definitely, we've definitely taken some creative license in the film, but really the creative license that we sort of took are things that I think, I guess the most important things in that movie we didn't take creative license with. Like the really amazing things that happen are all absolutely as they happened, got lost on the track.
The central characters are real people. You didn't invent central characters. You might have invented some wayside characters.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we sort of maybe amalgamated some sort of peripheral characters, but the central family, the main characters, absolutely are.
Let's talk about the projects. Tony Briggs, yeah. The Sapphires hit cinemas in 2012, and gee, it was an immediate success with critics and the general public. It was the highest earning Australian film at the box office in its opening weekend. And why not, too? It told the story of four Aboriginal women who form a music group. They travel to Vietnam in 1968 to sing for the troops. This is the audition, of course, that got them there. Extraordinary voices of some of the all-star cast there, including, of course, Miranda Tapsell, Deborah Mailman, Jessica Mowboy. Tony Briggs, it was amazing success. It wasn't just a true story, though, was it? For you, it was a family story. Tell me about who it was based on.
Yeah, well, story is based on my mother's experiences. You know, she'd often talked about her youth and the things that she'd done of. Because I asked her, I noticed at one point that she was mentioning Vietnam a lot, and a part of her life that I'd not really asked her about. Mm-hmm. And so we started talking about it, and before I knew it, I had notes penciled, and I just thought, wow, this is a pretty interesting story. So I asked her what she thought, whether she thought I'd, you know. What she thought of me writing, the idea of me writing a stage play,
yeah.
And she sort of shrugged and went, what do you want to do that for? you know, we talked about it a bit more and, you know, one thing led to another and here we are.
Yeah. The fact that you're writing about your mother and your aunt, that's got to change things for you, doesn't it? Do you feel the same liberty to cut and dissect and mold and manipulate in the way that you would a normal character? Surely not.
Well, if you knew my aunties, you'd know that one would have to tread very carefully with their stories.
Yeah.
And, the experience that my mother had in Vietnam, and she also went to, I think, Philippines and Thailand at that same time, around that same period. And I sort of put together, you know, snippets of that experience, and coupled with the idea that she was singing in a group with her cousins, Miney Naomi and Miney Beverly, prior to the time that she went over there, and they called themselves the Sapphire, so that's where the name came from.
Oh, okay, so the name came from there. Okay,
yeah. So that was the real kind of core of it. The beginning stages of it for me was that those days when they used to sing together, and my family would grow up listening to all kinds of music, and you know, they were initially asked to go over to Vietnam and it didn't happen, and the following year my mother was asked to go over with one of her sisters, and so we got talking about that. I said, you know, because they didn't go as the Sapphires, and I said, boy, could you imagine, how do you think you would have been received over there? She said, well, we were singing all of that music that they loved at the time, and our harmonies were just on point, and I think we would have been received really well. And so I just sort of put the two ideas together and created the story.
Okay. It was a play first, and then it was this hugely successful movie. How did the people depicted react? How did your mum and your aunt react when they saw themselves on stage?
Well, we did a workshop with Melbourne Theatre Company. They had a program called the Hard Lines. Yeah. I think it's called Hard Lines. They came and saw the reading. We had dinner afterwards, and it was all pretty quiet for a while there. And then at one point, I thought, oh no, if I've just ruined it, you know, and I was feeling a bit low. And one of my aunties looked at me and said, you know, we loved it, but you've got too much swearing in it, so take the swearing out. I took all the swearing out, and it actually made it a hell of a lot better anyway.
Yeah.
You know, it was received really well, so just right across the board. So
it's full of such good feeling. It's full of such love of life that it's hard to think that anyone watching it would think, was that me? Well, if it is, I'm okay with it. I'm okay with it. How you say you melded a couple of things together, the Vietnam experience into something else as well. How closely generally did you stick with the facts, or did you think, no, what I really want to get is this relationship between the women here?
Well, you know, with the film, you know, I remember our first Keith Thompson, who I co-wrote the film with, and I had a yarn, and one of the first things I remember him saying to me was, we want to try and get away from the film as much as we can, from the stage play as much as we can. I was like, that baffled me for a while there. And then as we worked through it, I could understand what he was saying. We had to create this story to have its, you know, I have a kind of a life of its own separate from the stage play. I mean, it's very, very close, but it just took on a life of its own. And, you know, through different kinds of research that we did. And but as far as the characters are concerned, you know, I borrowed from a lot of family members, you know, in terms of the women, in the leading women, and one of the male characters that was played by Chris O'Dowd. You know, just what I tried to do was I just thought about the energy, the positive energy that I got from all of the people in my family, and the laughter that I remembered from my youth, and the strength and powerful things. And I just sort of imbued all the characters with all the main characters with those qualities.
Mm.
I knew well.
Tony Ayres, you can relate to writing about family, I guess. The Home Song Stories is based on your childhood. What are sort of the considerations you had to take into account there, and how delicately do you have to tread?
I was just thinking, Tony's childhood was so happy and mine was so miserable. But we sort of, you know.
Oh, then you've got a responsibility to tell that story then.
I had to, because the story is about my sister and my mother and I, and it was about the year of my mother's death, I had to talk to my sister and get her permission to tell the story. And so, I mean, that was the key thing. It was a while ago, so, you know, like, that was the main relationship that I felt I had to protect. And then there were legal things that I had to sort of, you know, deal with as well. Like, what was hilarious was I had to change the names of everyone in the film from my own family names, which is how it was originally written, for legal reasons, so I couldn't actually be myself.
Why was that? Explain, or is that tedious to explain, or why was that?
You know, it's about potential secondary characters suing.
Okay,
you know, being too identifiable. You know, that's what I was told anyway.
Yeah,
I mean, you do have to try, you know, navigate your relationship to the real, but as Tony was saying, you know, like, it is such, you know, these things are still a fusion of, you know, your own lived experience and your craft as a storyteller, you know, like, and those two things together turn it into something else.
Mm. Did you lose relationships when you did this, or did it damage relationships when you did this, Tony?
No, not at all. Not that anyone's told me. Yeah. I mean, my sister and I are very, very close. She's writing her own book about our family history from her perspective, which is incredible. Like, her story is just unbelievable. And so, you know, we shared that story together.
Yeah. You're also behind Stateless, The Family Law, and, of course, most recently the TV series Fires, about the 2019 to 20 Black Summer bushfires. A catastrophe across many parts of Australia. Let's hear a clip from, this is from Fires.
I'm not saying that it was deliberate, but what if he did start that fire?
He's 14, Kath.
Give me a bit of credit, Duncan. I wouldn't just point the finger at anyone.
No. We're not in our right minds at the moment. And you've got to be careful what you say to Fee and Vince.
I'll say exactly what I want when
they're,
I want.
They're good neighbours. They deserve better than gossip.
I may be a lot of things, but I am not a gossip. Right. What do you want for dinner? Your choice of sympathy casseroles. Maureen's chicken and mushroom?
Can I get a steak?
Yeah, from Fires, which screened recently. Tony Ayres is, of course, the co-creator of this, an executive producer. And Tony, this is such a difficult, delicate topic, isn't it? I mean, bushfires are, for many Australians, an absolute reality, and lots of people suffered hugely in this. Did you feel you had a duty of care to those watching as well?
Absolutely. I think we talked a lot about it in the writer's room, and we talked to the ABC a lot about it, and we talked to various fire organisations and, you know, counselling groups. Mm. You know, we did the best that we could in terms of trying to find a way of talking about these stories without re-traumatising people, and, you know, we put warnings at the beginning and the end of the show.
Mm. Yeah, the series is inspired by people in communities devastated by the fires. The characters and I think the places too are fictional, aren't they? I mean, was that a deliberate choice? And also, were the storylines based on real stories?
We always used a fusion of things. So, you know, like some every episode had some sort of fictional element to it, and then but we took like moments from people's experiences and sort of tried to make the show feel more authentic from being, you know, carefully researched, but that it was more like a collage than a real thing, which is why it felt appropriate for us not to name a place. And it was also part of the whole thing of duty of care is that we felt as though if we, you know, made it clearly more fictional, it would be harder for people to just say, oh, that's me, you know, like, you know, that they can distance themselves a little bit from it.
Mm. Yeah, this, and it was such a traumatic experience too. I wonder about that word distance.
Mm.
You know, when's a good time to make a project like this? I mean, it's a bit like stand-up comedians deciding to make jokes about accidents, isn't it? And you often hear that line, oh, too soon, perhaps.
We heard that a few times. And yeah. I mean, particularly for Belinda and I and Liz Watts and Andrew Denham, the four of us were like the key creators of the show. But but Belinda and I had talked about that a lot as well. And I think we both felt and still feel strongly that the underlying reasons for why we want to make the show, which is to, you know, have some kind of cultural contribution to the climate change debate.
Mm.
They felt very urgent and pressing reasons for why we would do this now. Like, I think if it was a historical moment, then we would probably think again about it. But the fact that this is actually a global crisis that we're living in, it just feels as though, you know, we should be talking about this stuff.
Mm. Yeah, Georgie's just texted me and saying, I watched a few episodes of Fires, but I couldn't go on because of the Black Saturday fire trauma, which resurfaced for me. That would have happened for some people, wouldn't it? And you would have thought about that. How did you deal with that?
Well, like I said, we tried to, you know, make people aware of what was coming up ahead and the warnings, and then also, you know, like if people stuck with it to the end, we also gave them counselling sort of services to go to.
Mm.
We've also had the opposite sort of response as well. Like, we've had some amazing responses from fireys and from people who went through that trauma, and they talked very movingly about how the show helped them process emotions that they hadn't been able to process. So, I mean, I think that you know that you have to trust people to make a choice that if they're going to be traumatized, not to watch it, and then you have to offer people the possibilities of a cathartic experience.
Hmm. Yeah, to some, that's right. Apart from the climate change angle, that was also, as you saw it, part of the process. It was catharsis. It would have been catharsis for many people.
I hope so. Yeah, I mean, we certainly have had that response, and quite meaningfully and strongly from quite a few people. So you know, as a creator, you just take what good you've managed to do away with you, and you know, and hope that you know what you've done is worthwhile.
Hmm. Yeah, I think many people would think that it certainly was. Angie, to you. I mean, Angie Field is with us too, producer and co-founder of Aquarius Films, and produced Lion, which was a huge hit, the extraordinarily emotional story of a young Indian boy who was adopted into a family, I think in Tasmania, but then found his mother, astonishingly, through the use of Google Earth, of all things. Now, it sounds like a made-up story. It wasn't. You adapted the story, Angie, from a book. What was it about the story that you thought this had to be made into something?
Well, I think, as you said, it just has so many sort of amazing elements. I mean, the fact that this little five-year-old boy survived this enormously long trip on a train and then managed to survive for a really long time on the streets of Calcutta. Mm. At 5 years of age, and then to be adopted by an Australian family, and to sort of feel the calling of finding his biological mother and his home, and to use this amazing piece of technology, Google Earth, in order to do that. But then on top of that, not only does he find the roof of his house using Google Earth in the, you know, like finding a needle in a haystack out of the billions and billions of shacks in all over India, not only does he find the roof of his house on Google Earth, but then he gets on a plane and goes over there and manages to find his mother, who doesn't live in that house anymore, but sort of has moved around the corner. And, you know, the whole thing is just, as you said, like you couldn't make it up. It's so amazing. And it has the best possible ending for a movie. You know, he actually does find home, and he actually does,
I know,
find mother.
This spoiler alert, but there can't be many people who haven't seen Lion. That's right. Did that influence you thinking, well, this story ends well, and therefore that's powerful for me as a storyteller?
Absolutely. I mean, I think to make that story without that ending would be, I think, somewhat unsatisfying for the audience. It's just, you know, and as we sort of say in the cards at the end of the film, there are, you know, tens to hundreds of thousands of kids that go missing in India a year, and this is just one happy ending. And, you know, there are a lot of not happy endings to those stories, but this was just sort of it felt very much to me, I think personally, I think being a mum myself, that it was a story about the power of a mother's love in both directions. You know, he had the pull of his biological mother's love pulling him one way, and then he also had the power of his adoptive mother's love, which kind of gave him the support, I suppose, that he needed to go on the journey that he went on in order to find home.
As you mentioned at the beginning, Angie, Angie Field is my guest, but producer of Lion, the movie. As you mentioned, it was a pretty recent story, wasn't it? I mean, the main character, Saru, was, of course, a real live young man, and the foster mother, the adoptive mother, sorry, was alive and well, and so were the other main characters in the film. You must have felt a really powerful responsibility to actually tell their stories accurately, because you weren't fictionalizing it. You were saying this is them, even though they were, you know, they're played by actors, but this is them in the movie.
Yeah, we definitely felt the responsibility of showing those characters very authentically, and and showing the story as truthfully as possible. But, you know, as I was saying earlier, we did have to make it fit into the shape of a feature film. So we did change some things, timelines, and sort of amalgamated some characters and things. But the main storyline, the main characters are very real. And actually also in the adaptation process, there's a lot of things that ended up in the film that aren't actually in the book, and those things came from so we spent a lot of time with the family in development, and particularly Luke Davies and Garth Davis, the writer and director, spent a lot of time with Saru and also with Sue and John Briley, his adoptive parents. Mm-hmm. And a lot of stories came out of those conversations that that weren't in Saru's book but actually ended up in the movie.
Yeah. What do you do about, I'm not saying this happened in your story, in your film, but what would you have done about inconvenient facts that come up? That maybe there were thorns in a relationship which you want to be a different kind of relationship. The reality of it was something else. What how would you deal with that?
Well, I mean, if it was something that wasn't serving the story the way that you needed it to, you probably would omit it altogether. Mm. Or sort of try to find a way around it. I mean, we did have a character in our story, Saru's adopted brother, who it was sort of a very delicate storyline because he's very troubled by the trauma of his life before he was adopted. And so we talked a lot about whether or not we would include that, and if we did, how we would include it. So we had to be very, very careful with that story. But in the end, it felt really important to everybody to include it because it sort of almost demonstrated in a way, how amazing Saru's story was, I suppose, that, you know, he was able to avoid, those sorts of things happening to him. And I guess it was sort of just also important for the authenticity for the family. So, yeah, I guess you just have to ascertain whether it serves the story, and if it does, work out how to sort of, handle it delicately, or just, decide whether or not you need it, really. Mm.
This is a bit from it. The story is about a boy separated from his family in India. He's adopted by an Australian couple. In this scene, which features Nicole Kidman, it's not long after Saru, that's the boy in the movie, meets his adoptive parents for the first time.
Hi. So you've come a long way, haven't you? Little one. I'm sure it hasn't been easy. And one day you'll tell me all about it. You tell me everything, who you are, everything. I'll always listen. Always.
Yeah, it's such a tender moment. It's such a tender story too. Angie, what do you feel a responsibility in a sense for creating a reality for Saru and the rest of his family on both sides of this? That for people who don't know them, which is, you know, almost everybody, this is their story.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, I know the family quite well, and I've obviously thought about it a lot, and it's very exposing. I mean, and this is sort of their life on display, and particularly, you know, that scene and the scenes that sort of follow on shortly after when Saru was first adopted, and then also when Mantosh, his brother, came to live with them. The family went through a lot, and Saru has been through a lot, you know, being separated from his original family in the way that he was, living alone on the streets as a kid, and then coming to Australia and then finding home again and finding his mother again and sort of revisiting all of that trauma. It's very deeply emotional, and it is a trauma that he, I think, is still processing. So it's I think the making of the film for the family was a catharsis for them. I remember when we showed them the film for the first time, we showed Saru and John and Sue, and we just let them, we hired a cinema and just let them watch it on their own. And when the credits started rolling, we could hear the credits, and we went up into the projection booth and we looked out the window and we could see them. And they had all sat in completely different corners of the cinema, like really far away from each other, to watch the film. And as the credits and the sort of live archival footage and the credits started to roll, they all just sort of merged together into the middle of the cinema and just kind of held each other while the credits were rolling. And I think that was for us the moment when we knew we'd done them justice, you know. So it was a really beautiful moment. I think, yeah, the family just felt a real catharsis in seeing their story, I think, portrayed in a way that they felt was, you know, did it justice.
Mm. Yeah, it was indeed a powerful, powerful film and moment. Tony, you also worked on a film, Elders. Tell me about that.
Well, Elders was a short film that I directed, and it was a story about a true story about a young boy who was left to find his way through bush back to his uncles,
yep.
And his father and his uncles. And it's just a beautiful little story that I thought was a great opportunity for me to direct as you know, for my first film, actually. It's a beautiful little yarn.
Was it based on real things, or was it based on?
It's a true story. It's a story that actually happened, and I was, you know, it's quite honoured to tell that story. You know, it was the very beginning stages of going through law. What's called going through law for Aboriginal community,
yeah,
part of the world. And it was, something that I just thought, you know, young five-year-old or seven-year-old boy had to go through to on his journey to manhood. I was really, really, really honoured to tell that story.
Mm. Yeah. Tony Ayres, back to you on your show Stateless too. I mean, this was about four strangers in an immigration detention centre, and it went fairly and squarely into, I mean, these are real events, of course, and real things happened here, and this is fairly and squarely in some pretty ugly, divisive and nasty politics in Australia as well. Tell me about this particular project and show. What was going on here? Were you anxious to tell real stories about real people, or were you trying to tell, look, this is a real situation, I'll fictionalise what's going on because I want to tell a different story, a political story?
Yeah, well, I got brought onto that project by Kate Blanchard and Elise McCready,
mm-hmm.
and the three of us kind of devised a way of telling the story. It started with Kate's passion for, you know, like her... for issues around refugees. She's an ambassador for UNHCR. And so, you know, she brought a story to Elise and I that, you know, she felt very strongly about. And then we sort of worked out a way of telling a bigger picture about that particular part of Australia's history, pre-offshore detention, the onshore detention part. And I think we all felt very strongly that this was a history that a lot of people didn't know that much about. Like there was a big pall of silence over this history.
Yeah.
It was very hard for, and as a consequence of that, you know, we felt that, you know, we wanted to tell this, you know, we wanted to make sure that this is on the record, that this is what happened in this country. And there were some appalling things that happened. And we took the truth again as our sort of Bible, you know, like this was the centerpiece of the show, what really happened. But then we had to fictionalize it, you know, like we created characters, we melded stories, you know, we shifted and changed things. So as ever, these things are a fusion between real experiences and the craft of storytelling.
Yeah, because as we've known from the Children Overboard story early on, who controls the story controls the dialogue generally.
Absolutely.
Don't they? So was that important for you, thinking that we've got to tell the story because it's important that you know, we say what happened rather than what is supposed to have happened?
Absolutely. And I think you actually put it perfectly, that the way in which that narrative was spun was a real motivation for why we had to spin a not a counter narrative, but a complementary narrative that gave you the full picture of what this country is capable of, you know, and it's sometimes it's not very nice to look at those things, but, you know, I think it's really important that that's one of the functions of culture.
Yeah. We're talking about stories that are based on true stories, movies and TV shows that have come from real life, and the importance of, or otherwise, I suppose, of faithfulness to the story or faithfulness to something else, some other craft of storytelling or some other story arc that's important as well. What's important to you, Tony Briggs, in telling these stories? Is it to simply tell the stories that you've heard, or are you looking to tell? I mean, back to the question that I asked Tony Ayres, are you looking to try and control some other stories about, for example, Aboriginal people and how their stories are represented?
I wouldn't say I'm necessarily trying to control anybody's story or any kind of story, but I just sort of see myself as a lucky person who's in an industry where you get to share incredible stories to the world if you're so lucky. And, and you know, as far as Aboriginal stories are concerned, you know, we're just touching, you know, it's just touching the, you know, the beginning stages of it, really. And we're just scratching the surface, you know, of what can be told. And there's so many yarns that have not had the opportunity to, you know, really get out there. And that's why I think I'm so fortunate, you know. In many respects, I got lucky, and I love what I do. So I love telling these stories. And, like, you know, I grew up, my late aunt wrote Women of the Sun, one of the first television series in Australia, and it was a massive success. And that was a story again about my family from since, you know, colonization. And and it sort of inspired me to want to tell my story even more. And that's one of the reasons that I do what I do, in the hope that I can inspire another Aboriginal boy or Aboriginal girl or Aboriginal person to tell their story, whatever their story may be, whatever their journey is. And for me, this, you know, the Sapphires was one of many that I can tell, and one of many that, you know, one of many ways that I could have told it too, to be quite honest.
Yeah.
That's what I'm about.
Yeah. Where do you sit on this debate, Tony Briggs, that goes on a lot at the moment about who has the responsibility or rights to tell stories? There's so much of the, you know, the story of the Aboriginal story that hasn't been told and that is misunderstood and simply not known about. I mean, witness, for example, just how much we are recently learning, for example, about the frontier wars, for example, and those stories which, you know, for generations of Australians were never told, never no one knew about them. Where's the responsibility and who gets to tell those stories for you?
Historically, it's always been sitting firmly and held on firmly by the hands of white people.
Yeah.
And, you know, the reality is Aboriginal people haven't really had the voice and had the opportunity until recently to be able to tell our story our way. I mean, I think it would be ridiculous of me trying to tell Tony Ayres' story, you know, home song. And it's a lived experience that I have not had. And so many times in the past I've seen, you know, stories that have Aboriginal, Aboriginal characters and storylines to them that just are just wrong, not because a non-Indigenous person is told, but because it just doesn't ring true to me and my lived experience or other people who may have seen that piece of work. You know, I don't really think it's that hard to kind of understand. I know it can be frustrating for some filmmakers, but the reality is, you know, it's they're our stories and they're our stories to tell in our way, because we've never truly had control over those stories, and it's only just sort of happening now. I don't mind working with people, but when somebody's trying to tell my story, it's not coming from a lived experience.
Where do you sit with that as a creative person, Tony Ayres, on this idea that some stories can only be told by some people?
I think that, you know, like, I think our pact with an audience is to try to make them believe in what, you know, what they're watching is real, mm-hmm. you know. And so that was the first thing I said about, you know, why based on a true story is appealing to so many people. So I think that, you know, you have ways of making people believe, and having really detailed, culturally authentic, storytelling is a way of forming that bridge between the work and the audience. And so, absolutely people's experiences are crucial to that. And because it's in the texture and the detail that you can, you know, create that. I would also say that it needs to also have an understanding of craft and storytelling, because even the order of information is a creative choice. So that I feel as though those two things go hand in hand, that the better you are at what you do, the better the chance you have of actually getting an audience to connect to your own experience.
Yeah, okay. Angie, you're telling the story, telling Saru's story. What did you ever think, look, this is a really powerful story for him. Maybe he should be telling it?
I guess we were adapting the book that he himself had written, and we did it very much in collaboration with he and his family. So they read drafts of the script and provided feedback, and they were kind of there with us the whole way. They're very much are not filmmakers. They don't know anything about that process. So, it was essential that we put the movie together with, with the right people. Yeah. But I definitely feel like we did it very much in consultation with Saru and his family, in order to make sure that it felt authentic. I mean, he was, they were there while we were shooting and all of that sort of stuff. So I think you have to sort of do it on a case by case basis. Like, for example, we're developing another film where the people that the film is about actually form part of the writing team. So they are officially co-writing the film with a more experienced screenwriter, which is another way of doing it. There's so many different ways that you can do these things. So I think you just have to look at the project and the people and work out what's right, what the right process is for that project.
What's coming up, Tony Briggs?
Well, I'm working on an adaptation for a feature film of a novel by Tony Birch called The White Girl at the moment. And we will also be heading into the development of another book called The Yield by Tara June Winch.
Ah, so, yes, I've read that book. So, yes, it won the Miles Franklin. Okay, yeah. Tony, yes, what projects are you excited about coming up?
To be honest, I'd be excited if something happens. I'm just in sort of like this kind of crazy development period. I don't know what's going to happen next, to be honest.
All right, look, it's been a pleasure, terrific pleasure talking to all three of you, and also the joy you've brought us all for bringing these great stories to screens near us too. Thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to a Nightlife podcast. For more great conversations about the issues that impact you, as well as features on travel and food, head to the Nightlife webpage. You'll find it at abc.net.au/nightlife. You don't need to be a night owl to enjoy the nightlife. Yeah.